Thanks for the introduction, and I'm very happy to be here at the Premier Institute for Theoretical Physics to present my work about bosonic particle correlated state. So to begin with, we all know it is really hard to simulate many body systems in a classical computer. This is partly because the Hilbert space, the dimension of the Hilbert space increases exponentially as the number of particles. So merely to record a quantum state, we need an exponentially large of memories. So to simulate a molecule of tens of electrons in your laptop and not in so many computers in your room, well, we must find a good answer to do that. For example, the matrix product state. So Kepler do not know how to solve the equation for planet motion, but yet he was able to fit the data almost perfectly with an elliptical orbit. So today I'm going to talk about the bosonic particle correlated ansatz, which is a generalization of the Gross-Peter-Iwsky ansatz. And the difference is in the bosonic particle correlated ansatz, we capture the particle-particle correlations instead of just a product ansatz, which neglects all the particle correlations. Compared to the GP ansatz, our ansatz is like the elliptic orbit to the circular orbit. So the motivation to do that is because in some cases, the BEC is going a single condensate of molecules is going to fragment. In this case, you cannot do a perturbation method such as the Bogle-Bohr approximation to capture the physical essence of the state. So you must find some way to represent this strongly interacting system. And Bose's condensate we know is a gas, a dilute gas in a very low temperature. So why dilute? This is because in very low temperature, the gas is tend to become liquids or solids. So Schrodinger do not believe there exists a Bose's condensate because of that. But yet we can find a window in diluteness and the temperature so that BEC forms. And meanwhile, the gas remains to be a gas, not to condensate to liquids or solids. So the definition of a BEC is a large portion of the particles condense to a single mode. So more rigorously to speaking, is using the Penrose-Ansah criterion to say that the single particle reduced density matrix of a many-body system can be written in this form. Can be written in this form. So this is the Schmidt decomposition of this single particle reduced density matrix, which coincidentally equal to this equal time correlation matrix. And here, the lambda naught is dominant Schmidt coefficients. So a BEC forms when the dominant Schmidt coefficient lambda naught is approaching to one. So this is the Penrose-Ansah criterion, which rigorously state the phase transition to a BEC. Okay, so when the particle-particle correlation is low, we can write the GP ansatz like in this form, which is a product state of the all particles. And in the following, I'm going to present a different way of deriving the GP equation. And we are going to use this way to derive an equation for our state, which is the bosonic particle correlated state. So to begin with, we evolve the state for an infinitesimal time dt. And then we project the evolved state back to the product manifold at the end of the each time evolution of dt. So H is the real many-body Hamiltonian. So this represents the real time evolution, many body evolution. And then we project it to the red arrow, which is along, which is parallel to the product manifold. So we do this for many times, and we can get the gross Lapitsky equation using this procedure. And the one striking point is if we calculate the error of the projection procedure, we find it is not small at all. It is of order 1. So why the gross Lapitsky equation works so well? So the reason is if we look at the error for the reduced density matrices, rho 1, which is the single particle reduced density matrix, and rho 2, which is the two particle reduced density matrix, the error of these are really small. For example, this is 0, and the error of projection introduced in rho 2 is equal to 1 over n, which is also very small. So the definition of rho 1 and rho 2 is here. So the lesson we learned is physically lower order reduced density matrices are most important because in a lab, we cannot measure the whole many body wave function. The quantity we measured is related to the reduced density matrices, say for one body, two body. Good approximations do not necessarily mean small errors to the entire wave function. For example, we all know that the Broglie-Bohr ground state has a very tiny overlap with the GP ground state. Nevertheless, the GP ground state is, in most time, it does very well. So
the second, does it imply that the wave function keeps getting orthogonalized to the previous? Suppose I look at the wave function of some time, many body wave function.
Mm-hmm.
What is the overlap of that?
Yeah, the overlap of the wave of the entire wave of the entire wave function could be very small, but the lower order reduced density matrices could be identical or nearly identical.
So what does it mean?
If you consider the BBGKY hierarchy, you have some error in the entire wave function. It gradually propagate to the lower order that reduce the density matrices. So you may do well. So I find that if you only consider reduced density matrices of order square root n, then error is always small. Otherwise, if you consider higher and higher reduced density matrices, the error is going to be big. And one crucial thing can be exploited is it includes only up to two particle interactions. More generally, we can consider k-body interactions. And the error to higher order reduced density matrices only weakly affect the low order reduced density matrices. So let's say the error in the order of 1,000 particle reduced density matrices won't affect the one particle or two particle reduced density matrices much. So even at zero temperature, there's a lot of limitations to the product answers. So when the interaction between particles are very strong, our BEC is not going to stay in a single BEC. It's going to be fragmented. And also, when the Broglie-Bohr quasi-particles can be excited at low energy cost, think about the case of a double well BEC. When the ground state energy is so close to the first excited state, then there are bound to be a lot of particles which is excited to the first excited state. Then the Penrose ansatz criterion won't hold in this case. And also the case where the trapping potential changes too rapidly. This is identical to the second argument. The Broglie-Bohr quasi-particles are going to be excited. So we need, to represent the particle-particle correlations. We can just look at some Hamiltonians in condensed matter physics, for example, the BEC Hamiltonians, Heisenberg chain, and the quantum Hall effect Hamiltonian. The common traits of these Hamiltonians, they only includes two-body interactions. So to solve these many-body problems, two-body correlations must be effectively represented. For example, we want to calculate the ground state energy for this system. So the ground state energy is a function of the two-particle reduced density matrices. So one problem in many-body physics is, especially in quantum chemistry, is called the unrepresentability problem, which states for what two-body reduced density matrices we can find an extension in the n-body bosonic or fermionic Hilbert space. So if we can solve that, then we can calculate the ground state energy using the two-body reduced density matrices. But this problem proved to be hard. So here, I think this is an alternative way to attack this problem. Okay, to represent two-body correlations, we first look at the wave function of two bosons. So this is the most general form of the wave function of two bosons, where B, J, and B case are creation operators for the bosonic modes. And this lambda JK, typically a complex, is a symmetric matrix. So you can always make it symmetric because BJ commutes with BK, can kind of swap the order of J and K. So this matrix becomes symmetric. And we might know that we can diagonalize any symmetric matrix, any complex symmetric matrix with the unitary matrix U in such a way. U lambda UT equals to a diagonal real matrix. And these are the coefficients. And if we go into this basis, which corresponds to this transformation of the creation operators, we can write the two boson state in the Schmidt decomposition form, where the lambda j's are the Schmidt coefficients. And here we see we only got aj squared instead of this matrix form. So this is particularly useful to derive our states, which is of this form. First, you define the pair creation operator to be of this form. And second, you apply this pair creation operator n times on the vacuum. And this n lambda n is the normalization factor, where lambda is the Schmidt coefficient, and n is the number of pairs. Antoni Leggett used this assets for BEC, BCS crossover. But it's an assets for the fermionic system. So here, I will discuss how to use this assets for bosonic problems where the particle number is large. So this state corresponds to the wave function written in the first quantization form. So we might notice this is written in the second quantized form, and this is the first quantized form. And PS is the projection operator onto the symmetric subspace. So we have a bunch of product of bosonic pair states, and then we symmetrize that product of paired state.
Sorry, comment. If we take interacting bosons, mm-hmm. do a Bogoliubov theory, mm-hmm. And then come back to coordinate representation and look at n-particle projection, that has this form. Because the term AK, A minus K, the anomalous terms, basically correlates particles in the relative coordinates.
Yes,
the center of mass will be zero moment.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. But in a Bogoliubov approximation, you do not have this this kind, exactly this kind of form. It's a, it's kind of a perturbation on the GP state, but this is not a perturbation. You, if you have these lambdas, you can have like many modes to be excited. But in Bogle-Bohr approximation, there's only one dominant like mode, and you do a kind of mean field approximation. You substitute these four field operators, two of these four field operators with the mean amplitude alpha, and you get the Bogle-Bohr Hamiltonian. Is that clear? Okay. So because of this symmetrization, the correlations in the two particle state then spread to any two particles of the many body system. So we have particle correlations everywhere, not only x1, x2, but x1, x4, x1, and xn. So the normalization factor of the pair correlated. In the following of this talk, I will only talk about the pair correlated states. This capital A only includes two bosons, but you can generalize it to include three or four, but that will be too complicated. So in here, I only consider this A include the only two creation two bosonic creation operators. So the normalization factor can be calculated in this way. You apply the pair creation operator n times this side and that side. So why we care about an irrelevant C number, this normalization factor? This is because we can derive the reduced density matrices using this normalization factor. It's kind of like in thermodynamics, we have a partition function, which is a C number. But yet, we can derive all the interesting quantities using that one C number quantity. So this is a way to show how you can derive the single particle reduced density matrix using the derivative method. And more generally, you can show using mathematical induction, so the diagonal elements of rho q, which is the qth particle, which is the q particle reduced density matrix, can be represented in this way. Just take the derivatives regarding to the Schmidt coefficients of the with respect to the normalization factor. And using weak theorem, we can represent any matrix element with these diagonal ones. So knowing the normalization factor will allow us to calculate the whole reduced density matrices.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, of course.
How does your family of ansatz wave functions compare to Gaussian?
Okay, so let's go back. So it's quite close. You project the Gaussian wave function to the like 2n particle sector, you get this state.
All right. So how do you apply Wick's theorem then?
Okay, so the Wick theorem applied in the following way. Let's see. Okay. So you see there's a lot of A dags and A in the middle, and you have this pair operators in two sides, and you just contract one of the A dag with this pair operator capital A, and you will get another operator because there are two operators in the pair operator. If you contract one with this A dag, you get another one, and you kind of move this operator around, you can show the relation between the diagonal elements and the off-diagonal elements of the reduced density matrices.
Okay, maybe let me phrase the question differently. So what are the things you can't get with Wick's theorem for your states? Because I mean, for the the Gaussian wave function, you can calculate everything from the two particle correlation, right?
Yes.
But there's got to be something missing, which in your answers you can't get using Quick's theorem, right?
Okay. You can get an iterative expression for the diagonal elements of rho using Wick theorem, but it's not as efficient as using the derivative of the normalization to calculate it. Maybe we can discuss it afterwards.
Sure.
Okay. So the normalization factor is pretty hard to calculate. If we really want to calculate it, we can express this into the following sum, where this sum is over all the negative integers which satisfying the sigma uj equals to n, where the n is the number of particles. So this is crazy. In the thermodynamic limit, we are not going to derive anything from this expression. So we need some approximations at larger n so that will allow us to retrieve the important information. Okay, so before we derive analytic results, let's see some numerical calculations. So this is a case where the Schmidt rank is 3. So we got a 3 Schmidt coefficient, lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3, which equals to these values. And this is the eigenvalues of the single particle reduced density matrix. As we see, if the number of particles gets bigger and bigger, then the contribution of these two Schmidt coefficients kind of dies out, leaving only one Schmidt coefficient that dominate the states. And let's see this case where the first two Schmidt coefficients are so close to each other that they are of the order of 1 over n, where n is the number of pairs. So in this case, the interesting thing happens. We still see the contribution from the third Schmidt coefficient dies out, but the contribution of lambda 1 and lambda 2 remains at the particle number, which equals to 1 over their spacing. And in this plot, I plot basically repeat the last plot, but I add these two solid lines, which is if you dump this lambda 3 and renormalize this lambda 1 and lambda 2, and you see in the larger n limit, they conform pretty well with each other. So without changing the reduced density matrix, we only keep the greatest Schmidt coefficients. Say their spacing is of 1 over n, where n is the number of pairs. And we just dump every other Schmidt coefficients because they are not going to contribute to the reduced density matrices. Okay, so this gives us this expression for the Schmidt coefficients, where S is the Schmidt rank, and this parameter zeta j is of order 1, and this is the number of pairs. So the difference of the Schmidt coefficients is of order 1 over n. So if we assume that, we can approximately calculate the normalization factor plus something 1 over n. And this expression is really, really good because the contribution from the dependence of n is factorized to the dependence of the Schmidt coefficient. In this case, it's zeta. And this integral is over the S minus 1 hypersurface of this Gaussian function. And we can define this part to be upsilon. And we will see. We will see this part of n is irrelevant to our calculation. So we only need this part of upsilon. That this function encodes all the information of the pair correlated state. Then we can use this function epsilon to calculate the reduced density matrices of the Q particles. With the same trick as before, just put this in because this is factorized, so everything canceled here and here. So we got this nice form. And this epsilon is still a rather complicated equation to complicated quantity to calculate because it includes s minus 1 integral. And we can use a little bit of trick to convert this integral to a one-dimensional Laplacian transformation. So this is a one-dimensional integral. And this is pretty nice because this expression will allow us to link the two particle density matrices just from the single particle reduced density matrix. And it and this encodes a lot of information of the state. Okay, so let's see the simplest case where the Schmidt rank S is equal to 2. So in that case, we can solve the whole thing analytically. So in this case, the epsilon function equals to this nice form where the I naught is the zeroth order modified Bessel function. So in the Schmidt basis, the single particle reduced density matrix reads like this. And this is the first order modified Bessel function. And chi equals to the difference of the two zetas. Remember, zeta related to the Schmidt coefficient. OK, let's just compare this analytic, this large N analytic result to the numerical ones. And we see the red diamond represents the numerical calculation. And the blue solid line corresponds to the.
So physically, normally you have one condensate and one eigenvalue.
Yes.
You have two eigenvalues.
Yes, I have two eigenvalues. So the condensate is fragmented.
Spatially fragmented.
No, it's not spatially fragmented. It's just fragmented to two modes. It can be spatially at all. It can be overlapped.
So what are the eigenvectors? For example, the examples that you are studying. One is a zero momentum state, another is a.
So, for example, in the double well case.
Symmetric and anti-symmetric.
Yeah, it might be symmetric and anti-symmetric. Or it can be like two separate wave functions in either wells.
And you are able to get it just by modifying this phi that you had in the pair function. Is that the point? You given answers for the wave function.
Mm-hmm.
You symmetrized over products of phi x1, x2, phi. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that by suitable choice of that phi, you can implement all this?
Yeah, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is a comparison of the eigenvalues of the single particle reduced density matrix, which is not so interesting because there's no information about particle correlations in the single particle reduced density matrix. Now let's look at the two particle reduced density matrix. So this is the form that gives by the pair correlated states. Remarkably, we see in the Schmidt basis, these two terms are not equal to zero. So these terms correspond to annihilate two atoms in the mode one and then creates two atoms in mode two. So conventionally, people use the twin fork ansatz to treat the like double well case or some kind of fragmented BEC case. But for fragmented twin fork states, these two terms is zero. They're never going to show any kind of such correlations of two particles. And if we calculate the entanglement of this state, it is zero. So it is stated in this paper that you cannot have entanglement in bosonic systems of large number of particles because of the monogamy of entanglement. So I would be very curious to see what kind of quantum correlations can be exist in this two-body reduced density matrix of many bosons. Okay, let's look at the double well scenario. So this is the case where the barrier in the middle is very low. So you got a superposition of different states of number distributions in each well. And this is the superconducting phase where you got a single condensate. And easily you can written this into the form of pair collective state. And in another extremal case, where the barrier is rather high, you got twin Fock states, where you got n particle here and n particle there. And in this case, you can always you can also write this state into the form of pair correlated state. So the question is pair correlated state nicely interpolated these two states in the middle, the transition, transition part is what we are mainly interested in because it has many applications in interferometries with BECs. Okay, so let's look at the ground state of the two-side Bose-Hubbard model. So this is the exact solution calculated numerically, and this is the closest bosonic pair correlated state. We see they match pretty well. And this is the twin fork state that people usually use to describe such system. We see this performs poorly to reproduce the real ground state. And we can see a transition from this, state is close to the, this state is rather close to a single condensate. So we can see this is the purity of the single particle reduced density matrix, which equals to 0.9. And we gradually increase the particle-particle interaction. And we will see the purity gets smaller and smaller. And we increase the interaction. The pair correlated state also behaves well. So you see these correlations is represented, but in the twin fork states, you do not get this term here. And we lower the, increasing the interaction continuously, then this entering the multi-insulating phase. So the message is the bosonic pair correlated state always reproduces the exact ground state of the two-side Bose-Hubbard model. So the error is rather small, and this is a plot for the time evolution case. So in this case, we have a pure BEC initially at time equals to zero, and then we put a rather strong particle-particle interactions, and let the system evolve. And we can see this black square represents the evolution of the purity of the condensate, and this red diamond represents the error, which is calculated by the trace distance for the GP assets. And this blue dot is the error of the twin fork state. And this green triangle is our pair correlated state. So we see that the error of our state is always very low for the time evolution of the two-side Bose-Hubbard model. So notice I use trace distance instead of fidelity here. If I plot the fidelity, then you can hardly see an error for the pair correlated state. This is because the fidelity is second order in the deviation of the quantum states. So it is rather close. So you can use the pair correlated state to derive some time evolution equations, which is similar to the GP equations. And it might be a generalization of the GP equation. OK, so remember, this is the definition of the pair correlated state, which equals to that. And this is the pair creation operators. Now, it's now the Schmidt coefficients and the creation operators are functions of time. Notice I do not include a T in this normalization factor because using our method, this normalization factor is always a constant, no matter what lambda changes. So the bosonic creation operators can be represented by this way, where psi j is the orbitals for the pair correlated state. And we need a set of a coupled equation to determine the dynamics of the Schmidt coefficients and the orbitals. Okay, we are going to use the same technique. We derive the GP equation. We evolve the state for a tiny amount of time dt, and then we project the state back to the pair correlated state manifold. So this is the real evolution, and this is the projected state, and this is the error, which equals to the difference. So in this case, the error is always perpendicular to any small variation of the pair correlated states, which is delta psi PCS. And this equation is equivalent to this equation. And we see from this equation, it is rather hard to calculate the evolution of psi PCS. But we notice we may change this equation to the single particle reduced density matrix. So the projection procedure won't change the single particle reduced density matrix. And this is the way we derive the dynamic equation of this psi PCS. So here is how we did that. So we evolve the state under the real Hamiltonian for a small time. We evolve the single particle reduced density matrix under the real Hamiltonian for a tiny amount of time dt. And then we update the psi PCS with that single particle reduced density matrix. So if we really do that, we can write the Hamiltonian written into a sum of the single particle part and the two particle part. And the contribution from the single particle part is rather easy. It contributes to a unitary transformation of each orbit. And the hard part is due to the interacting part, which we can write like this, where these LJKs are matrix elements of this integral, which we have an efficient series expansion to represent this integral. And the whole equations looks like this. So if we only have one orbit psi j, then this goes back to the GP equation. But if you got like more than one orbitals, the things got complicated. We see that psi j is coupled with psi j star. And also, every orbit is going to play a role in the mean field of other orbitals. And because this equation do not preserve the orthonormality of the orbitals, we have to renormalize these orbitals at each time step. And this gives rise to the evolution of the Schmidt coefficients. And also, you can revise this equation to add couplings of psi j and psi k. And that will save you from the renormalization. OK, so we have some potential applications of this asset. For example, microwave interferometries, superfluids, like helium-3, you got fragmented condensates, and maybe for quantum chemistry. Okay, thank you for listening.
If there are no more, then we'll thank Zhang again.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh, yeah.
So you gave some general ideas at the end there as to where you that might be useful. Can you name any, have you looked for any specific problems where it turns out to be a particularly good ANSATZ yet?
Yes, if you consider about the BEC-based interferometry, you split BEC into two parts and you add a phase to one of the part, and then you recombine them. So people do not really know whether the separate part preserves the relative phase of the two BEC or not. So this ANSATZ might shed light to this problem, which has applications to real like interferometry experiment.
And also, you mentioned quantum chemistry. What sort of situations did you have in mind there?
Okay, so for quantum chemistry, it's kind of different from this scenario because you've got fermions rather than bosons. So in that scenario, you must introduce the fermion pair quality state. You use the fermion creation and annihilation operator instead of the bosons. You may find an ANSATZ for like many electrons using this.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So question about the picture, is it sand or snow?
It's sand. So this is the White Sands National Monument in New Mexico. It's kind of fun to hiking through these white sands, especially tonight because the moon is going to be very, very light and the sand reflects the moonlight.
So there wasn't a freak snowstorm in the desert?
No, it's not Canada, it's New Mexico.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, well, thanks, Zhang, again.